Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Good morning, 720 WGN, Monday morning. Can it be May the 20th already? It is. Dave Bennett here, the Steve Cochran Show for a Monday morning. Mary Sandberg Boyle's out sick today. What's going on with that? Sorry to hear Mary's not feeling well. So
all that celebrating from the PGA.
Oh, I don't know if it was
or
that.
Game of Thrones.
Maybe it was that.
Well, she doesn't watch it.
I doubt it. That's Mary Vandevelde, Steve Ruzanich in the newsroom,
good
Super
morning.
Joe, and what's your stage name, Mike? Do we not mention that on the air? Super Mike is on the other side of the glass, Mike Heidemann. And
I didn't know he had a name.
Yeah, he's got a stage name. I don't know if he wants to reveal it or not. We got a busy show for Monday morning, as usual. Yeah, we will have our PGA Championship results, the results of our picks. Doc Most later this hour with his weekly visit. We've got a great MVPP, Most Valuable Person on the Planet, to tell you about. Congressman Mike Quigley, Ryan Nobles from CNN. We'll talk some racing later on. Everybody enjoy watching the horse without the rider in the Preakness on Saturday?
I couldn't take my eyes off it.
I mean, you had to be rooting for him, right? I mean, even though it didn't count.
Oh, yeah.
And that everybody was okay. The John Velasquez, the jockey, was okay. And I saw one of our colleagues here. Might have been Richard Roper said that was his long shot pick to win the Preakness.
So a jockeyless horse?
Yeah. Well, not without the jockey, though. See, before he lost the jockey. We've got our PGA results coming up this morning. And we're also, I hope, going to get to the bottom of an issue that's affected me deeply personally.
I'm not surprised that you haven't let it go since Friday.
Now, and Mary, you're kind of in charge of the refrigerators around here, right?
I gave up that position when we moved to the new building because I got so much crap from, you know, the other one.
Well,
from cleaning out the other one. Everybody just, you threw away this. You threw away my yogurt. You threw away my...
Well, speaking of yogurt, I don't bring stuff in and put it in the fridge every day.
I didn't do it.
But, I'm not accusing. Certainly, I didn't think you did. I don't know who did. But on Friday, I brought a yogurt for breakfast. That was going to be, I don't eat before
For
Friday's breakfast. So 4:30 Friday morning, I put the yogurt in the refrigerator.
Right.
I put it, and I knew exactly where I put it. It was the back shelf, wasn't bothering anybody. It was just sitting there minding its own business. At about 10:20, I went back to the refrigerator to get my yogurt for breakfast. Gone.
Mm. Which refrigerator? The mid refrigerator or the far refrigerator?
The one
closest
in
to us. Yeah.
The one could be just south of where my desk is, in that kitchen area.
By the Bob
near the
Collins
conference
office.
Room. Yeah.
Yes.
Welcome to the club, Dave. Welcome to the club.
Okay, but it was not even 6 hours.
Right? Well, that's way too long. Way too long without your name.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I had bagels. Somebody took an entire thing of bagels and cream cheese. They ate it over a weekend.
Weekend, you never leave anything over the weekend. It's gone.
I don't leave anything now anymore at all.
Steve, I'm sorry that happened to you. I really am.
And I'm sorry that happened to you, Dave. I feel for you. I understand what you're going through.
But it's not like if someone was hungry, needed a yogurt, I would be glad to buy them a yogurt. I really would.
Yeah, run downstairs and get your own yogurt. You know?
And Julie Stern from our traffic department offered me a replacement yogurt. I said, Julie, thanks. It's very kind of you. I don't want to take your yogurt. It was really on principle. I want to find my yogurt.
Well, they know you eat oatmeal. Then you went.
Well, I was out of oatmeal.
Schedule.
That's why I brought the yogurt.
So have you noticed that refrigerator is almost bare now because people have decided they're not bringing stuff in anymore?
Yeah,
which is crazy. This is one of the great radio stations in America. We have wonderful people working here. Mm-hmm. but we have a thief.
You can probably narrow it down, Dave.
It is. That is a window of opportunity that I think that the cameras would be able to find.
That's what I've always said. There should be a camera right next to the refrigerator.
Well, there's one pointing at the refrigerator.
There is.
So we would have security tape.
Yes, there would be tape.
You go through that out, 6:30 to 10:30, and you're going to find the culprit.
And you know what kind
of yogurt. Well, not even at 4:30 to 10:30.
You remember the kind of yogurt and everything.
I do. I'm not going to say it because someone might go out and buy one and put it back in there just to spite me.
I mean, I eat a yogurt every morning, but I did not eat yours. Mine
no,
is
I,
my bag,
I believe you, Mary.
I know you do.
I don't think anyone on this show would do it because we're a team. We all work together.
Well, and you'd see us eating it, too. I mean, if I went and got your yogurt, you'd see me sitting here eating.
Yeah, we have cameras everywhere.
So you declined Julie Stern's offer to give you a new yogurt. Are you plotting your revenge? Do you feel the need to search the refrigerator and find a yogurt to repay yourself?
No, I wouldn't do that, Joe. You know me.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
I put a yogurt in there this morning. Now, I thought of maybe spiking that yogurt.
Yeah.
Wow, you can't let this go, can you?
A little revenge. Now we're talking.
No, I just, you know, it's really a matter of principle. I mean, really.
But it's also, aside from the principle, it's frustrating because you're like me. This is your food. This is what you need to eat. So you're hungry at 10 o'clock when you eat that or whenever you eat it. Like me, that when I bring my bagel, it's, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock. I'm starving when I eat that bagel.
I know, you really depend on it. Sandberg's missing this morning.
Uh-huh. Yeah, someone stole her too. So they stole my yogurt, and Steve, they stole Sandberg.
Now, I heard about the yogurt thing, and I heard that you were not pleased to the point where you may have even cursed.
Oh, I wouldn't do that,
Dave.
I heard there was a curse.
No, no, never.
Do we have any idea who did it?
No, and that's, I'd like to know.
We want to check the camera
I would like to know who at WGN Radio would do that. 6 hours. It wasn't even in there 6 hours.
Well, I saw the police tape around the refrigerator.
Yeah,
so obviously one of the best detectives in the city is on it.
Maybe it was a guest.
Well, I doubt that. I mean,
because, you know, that we do say, help yourself to coffee in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, who?
That's a stretch going to the yogurt, though.
I know you've contemplated this.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've, you know, talked about it with family and friends, as any crime victim would. Who do you think it was? I mean, you must have an idea.
I mean, I'm sure it wasn't anyone on our show.
No, I don't think it was either.
And there's a limited pool of people in the office between 4:30 a.m. and 10:20 a.m. when mm-hmm. I discovered the evidence missing.
What was the last time that you saw it waiting for you to consume it?
About 4:32 a.m. on Friday.
So anytime in the morning. Let's think about the people who arrive here at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Salespeople.
It's Friday, though.
And you know, that refrigerator is not used by a lot of people in terms of, like, sales, because they have that one up by them.
And perfect cover.
That is the one near them. Oh. This is the one I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Perfect cover. Yeah, it's got to be the salespeople.
Oh, wow.
So I don't think there's a camera on that one.
Yeah. I blame John Gallagher. John Gallagher is the...
Sales honcho?
The sales boss, the sales manager. I think he stole it. So Super Joe, do you think it was John Gallagher, the sales boss?
If somebody stole his yogurt and he was looking for yogurt revenge, I think it could be him.
Yeah.
Dave, I would put it in the fridge by us, and that way there's a camera on it. You'd be able to track
this down. Yeah, you
got to
do that.
Okay.
Closest
going forward.
To us.
Good advice.
I would have Dean's mother come in here and make you yogurt and do it quietly in a separate room and just bring it to you fresh.
I was offered a replacement yogurt.
By who?
By Julie Stern in our traffic.
Whoa,
department.
Whoa. Guilt.
No, I don't think it was. Our desks are near each other.
Who would offer you the yogurt other than someone who felt bad about the crime?
No, she saw how upset I was, and she was being kind.
Is it possible that somebody confused your yogurt for their yogurt?
No chance.
Okay.
No
chance. So it's like an off. It was a brand that only you would have bought.
And I put it in the back of the refrigerator.
It's backlit. It's got a picture of Dave on the side.
Got to put your name on it. That's all you got to do. It's what I tried to enforce
Mary,
the last time.
On.
It never worked.
You shouldn't have
community
to put
refrigerator.
Your name
it's always
it.
Dangerous.
No, I know, but that's people. Just,
God willing.
I don't know.
God willing, Dave, there will be more yogurt, but I can't guarantee it.
I mean, this kind of stuff happens at other radio stations, not at WGN.
Yeah. I think we all remember the great crime spree at the Mix.
Yes.
Yes. All right, look, Lori Lightfoot's going to become the new mayor in a matter of hours. What are we doing with that coverage-wise, Steve?
We will have all of it online. The stream will begin at 10 a.m. online, and then when she takes the oath of office and gives her speech at about 10:30, that'll be on the big stick here at 7:20.
Congressman Mike Quigley this morning, Ryan Nobles from CNN. Dean is in London. He's allegedly going to get a hold of us from London. The dragsters are coming back to Joliet, and Scott Paddock will be on to talk about that. Lovely and talented Mindy Rickles will join us this morning. That's Don Rickles' daughter, who's a very funny stand-up comedian in her own right. She'll be on. Doc Most in just a few minutes, and many other things on a busy Monday. Sandberg is out today, and we believe highly contagious. We've asked that she be put in a room and no one be allowed to see her. And really, that's the way she'd be happiest anyway.
She probably doesn't have that flu, does she? Nasty flu.
Didn't she get, she got a shot.
Yeah, but there's a flu going around.
My wife has been
not help.
Really, really sick all weekend.
This is what happens when you keep your home too clean.
And too cold.
And too cold.
And too organized. We also have the winners of the PGA picks as well. The horseless rider, or the riderless horse, I guess would be the right term. Mm-hmm. The PGA championship winner, as I said, and also the fact that the champ's girlfriend couldn't get a kiss from him. And that's all over the place. And one amazing story out of Atlanta at Morehouse College. All right, 6:19. We'll do the top six in detail in just a moment.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Don't kick.
Get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, item number one. Lori Lightfoot will make history today. The first black woman, as well as the first openly gay person to be sworn in as mayor of Chicago. How long do you think it'll be before we stop referring to her as black and lesbian?
I would hope today. After the inauguration,
I would
if
hope
not
it,
sooner.
I would hope it's today. Mayor Lightfoot. And if you did not hear Mayor Emanuel in his last appearance as mayor on this show last week, it's on the podcast. You can go to WGNRadio.com or the WGN Radio app. And, Steve, I think you'll agree with me. Nobody thought he would sing three songs.
No. And call you Boobala.
Yeah, sure. and doing I Gotta Be Me the way he did was a real showstopper.
He got a nice rousing send-off on Friday when he left City Hall for the last time. Lots of applause, people hugging him and slapping him on the back and stuff. It was a nice little send-off.
Well, we look forward to enjoying many more visits from the soon-to-be former mayor and drifter.
When he's not fishing or bike riding.
Yes. As he put it, the first Jewish fly fisherman. We don't know that stacked statistically accurate, but, you know.
He's supposed to start his bike ride today, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so. I hear the entire inauguration of Mayor Lightfoot again starting this morning, 10 a.m. on the stream at WGNRadio.com, and then on the radio at 10:30 when she takes the oath of office. Next. President of the United States tweeted out to Iran that if they want to fight, they've got one, and it will be the end of them. Iran tweeted, I don't speak the language, but Iran tweeted back, I know you are, but what am I? Next, in the second case of measles in Cook County and the first in the city of Chicago and the eighth in the state of Illinois so far this year. Elena Ivanova, the spokesperson for the city of Chicago, said the patient is, quote, an international traveler who is in several countries that are experiencing measles outbreaks. So does that mean we know who it is and they're in a room with Sandberg?
Oh, I don't. Well, maybe.
Wait, does Sandberg have the measles?
No. I'm kidding. I don't know what she has to mess with. Next. Past 2 months, an Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo has become the second largest ever recorded. 1,100 people have died. Hmm. Aid groups, I should say the death toll is actually far higher than that, and they're tamping down the number to scare less people. Next, Mayor Pooh.
What? Take two.
Mayor Poop.
We went
terrible
from measles, Ebola to poop.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, slayed him on Fox. On Fox News, the largest crowd, according to Chris, Wallace?
Wallace, yes.
Chris Wallace said largest crowd they've had for any of those. Got a standing ovation when he was done. Took a shot at Tucker Carlson and then, I don't know, somebody else in the primetime blowhard lineup.
Did you see the president on Twitter wasn't too happy with Fox for giving Buttigieg some time?
They said he liked Mike Wallace better.
Yeah, and then you know it. Chris Wallace said, "I know you are, but what am I?"
Right.
Yeah.
Na-na-na-na boo boo.
Yeah. The president thinks, and you know, with fair reason, if he watches a lot of Hannity, that it's his network. So can't believe the team's going against him. One of the Fox correspondents said something to the effect of, "Well, at least he came here to answer questions, which is more than you do." You know, not that he doesn't come to Fox, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do interviews. He doesn't
specifically with Chris Wallace. I think was the comment there that
it was
he that Buttigieg was courageous enough to come and take questions from Chris Wallace, which is something you don't do speaking to the president,
right? Next, speaking of courage, Justin Amash has been labeled courageous. Can we leave the term courageous to first responders and single moms trying to raise four kids on their own and people like that? Listen, I think what Justin Amash, the congressman from Michigan, did is great. He's a Republican who came out and said the president ought to be impeached. And he said most of Congress hasn't even read the Mueller report. Well, get off your tired, lazy, entitled behinds and at least do that so you can feel even worse about the fact that you're hiding. Meanwhile, as well, there is a tremendous commercial. We'll run this later, but a commercial that is running that is saying to the Democrats, get off your collective behinds and do your jobs. It's not about you being reelected. More on all of that later. Next. PGA Championship, second major of the year in golf on the regular tour. Brooks Koepka wins again. He is now the two-time PGA champ. He'll try to be the three-time U.S. Open champ at Pebble Beach next month. And he almost made it look interesting after, you know, walking away with it. He made four straight bogeys, and Dustin Johnson got within one, and then Dustin Johnson did what Dustin Johnson does and smacked it in a place where he couldn't get up and down and save par. And well, the rest is history. Brooks Koepka wins. I don't know how long that relationship's going to last with the girlfriend.
Well, he did kiss her afterwards.
Right. Only after he hugged about 14 other people.
Yeah. She was in the receiving line.
And because every video is all of our business now, Jenna Sims, his girlfriend, who's a model and an actress, much like myself, walking in with him, tried to kiss him twice as they were walking, and he almost stiff-armed her.
Yeah, he left her hanging.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, this is a great story. A billionaire technology investor, in the middle of his commencement address at Morehouse College in Atlanta, announced he would pay off all of the student loans of the graduating class, which is going to cost him about $40 million. How about that?
It's pretty cool. Robert F. Smith is his name. 396 students will have all of their college debt wiped out.
The historically all-male black college in Atlanta is celebrating this morning, as you can imagine. But this is an inspiring thing that should make everybody feel good. I mean, imagine the way these lives are going to change. It's going to be interesting. And I hope they do this. I hope they are able to start a project today, literally, and trace the lives of those graduates and the choices they make now that they're not going to be saddled with debt.
You know what this means? There will be more children in the world. Because remember, the millennials last week were saying they couldn't have children because they had to pay student loans. So
well,
now that's one of their reasons.
Now they can have kids and buy a house.
Right.
And wouldn't it be great if this now becomes a thing, if other billionaires adopt a graduating class? I mean, there are not that many of them. They could do it. And it's $40 million for a billionaire. That's nothing.
Or adapt some classes.
But I don't want to poo-poo it either. I mean, he didn't have to do it.
No.
He stepped up and he did it. It's a very, very, very generous thing to do.
This is great. This is fantastic.
So well done all the way around. And you know what? That's almost courageous. It's certainly something we all ought to be very happy about. So
there should be a documentary. You're right. They should trace these kids.
Yeah.
Do a documentary and see what happens.
See the choices they can make, because it's got to be positive for the rest of us.
It's not required, though, for commencement speakers to do that, is it?
No.
Well, if it is, I'm turning down the two that I've been offered.
I would think so.
Because I don't have that kind of dough. I could get everybody, say, a candy bar from the vending machine. Mr. Smith, thank you for that. We're going to come back with Dr. Kevin Most. Got a lot to talk about with him today. You know what he's going to talk about for you coffee drinkers, which I think is everybody on the show.
I'm very excited about this.
Coffee drinkers, how much coffee is too much coffee? And other coffee things.
I think when you start shaking really hard, that's when you get too much coffee.
So much so that it spills.
Yes.
Headlines next, 720 WGN.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Hey, slow down, Eddie. What's the matter?
They're making faces at me because I've had a couple of cafe lattes, but I'm entitled to them. I can have as many cafe lattes as I want. That was the settlement.
That's it?
That's it. What, you want one, George? I can get one for you. No problem. Jay, you want one? They're delicious. My pleasure.
You've got to stop it. You're all hopped up on the caffeine.
Well, I feel like I'm talking a little faster, but it's very hard to tell.
You're racing.
Well, I got things to do. I'll see you later. Bye.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us now. Should we congratulate the bride and groom?
Absolutely. You know, this past weekend, Claire, my goddaughter, and Kurt's daughter married Matt Peterson, and it was just an unbelievable ceremony, wonderful reception. Just so happy for the two of them, and she's just a great kid, and he's a wonderful person. So congrats to the new Mr. and Mrs. Claire and Matt Peterson. So
yeah, we like Claire a lot. Claire's a beautiful girl, and we're not sure about Matt. Is that what you're saying between the lines here? We got to keep an eye on this kid.
We're gonna have to watch him, but
most importantly, how did the mom and dad of the bride feel about the groom? Do they love him? I hope.
Oh yeah, they love him. They think he's great. And you would have laughed at Kurt. Kurt did a great little speech, which had a little comedy in it and a little tears in it.
I was going to say, to get through it, I would have been a basket.
Yeah, he was kind of a puddle at times, but it was fun. Yep.
Congratulations to the entire Most family.
Yeah, thank you.
Sponsored again by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Quick coffee census. Sandberg's not here. I know she drinks coffee. Dave, you drink coffee.
I do drink coffee.
Super Joe, do you drink coffee?
I sure do.
All right. Michael, do you drink coffee?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go to the newsroom. Mary Vandeveld?
Absolutely not.
You do not?
Drink tea.
Okay, and Steve Grzenich?
Absolutely yes. Yes, yes, yes.
All right, I don't drink coffee or tea. And Mary Vandeveld just drinks tea. So we've got about a 91% compliance rate, even though I didn't do the math.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what it is. The world drinks coffee.
They do. And, you know, I'm very disappointed. I think, you know, you teed this up last week, I understand. And Dave was freaking out to a point where he wasn't even going to come in today because I was going to talk a little bit about coffee.
Yeah, because he assumed as a doctor, you're going to say coffee's going to kill him.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you're not going to say.
I am not going to say that at all. You know, we've talked about coffee in the past. You know, coffee has a lot of benefits, and I don't drink coffee, but coffee has a ton of benefits. Decreased risk of Parkinson's, decreased risk of Alzheimer's, decreased risk of liver cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer.
Why is that?
Decreases your risk for type 2 diabetes, curbs depression, cognitive decline slows. So, I mean, it has a lot of benefits.
All because of one ingredient, or just it happens to trigger things in the body for all of those?
There's a couple key ingredients. Obviously, caffeine is one of them, and then it's very high in antioxidants, which we know decrease inflammation and help repair cells. So those are the two big things. The interesting thing is a lot of these studies, and there's been a lot of studies, what they're looking at is people that drink between 2 and 4 cups of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel that's a reasonable amount.
Is it? I don't know.
And, you know, the heart study was done out of a Dutch study of 37,000 people, and they followed them over 13 years and saw those who drank coffee 2 to 4 cups a day had a 20% decrease chance of heart disease.
So you're saying, Doc, if I'm reading you right, you're saying babies should start drinking coffee immediately and work their way through to the day they die. Is that what you're saying, Doc?
Well, I'm not going to go quite that far, Steve, But I think the biggest thing is the study that just came out recently that shows that too much of a good thing is not good for you. So that's probably the key message today is a study came out of Australia that looked at 350,000 individuals, so a very large study. And they showed that, you get the heart benefit as long as you're staying in that 2 to 4 cup range. When you get to the 6 cup range, and a cup for them is defined as 75 milligrams of caffeine, you saw a plummet in your risk and actually increased your risk, of heart disease. So it's a little bit good. Too much is not good as far as heart disease.
So the benefits become a risk.
Yeah. We've talked about that all the time. You know, everything, a little bit of everything is okay, but a lot of something that might that you might think is good for you can actually harm you.
And do the math here again for me. Is it 300 milligrams of caffeine a day? That's the high end?
Yeah, it's about 450 is the high end that you want. But and that's important because people look at it, you know, individuals that drink Monster energy drinks after they've had a couple coffees in the morning, you're pushing yourself over that level just because the hidden caffeine in some of these Mountain Dew and Monster energy drinks and you know, all the energy drinks, actually.
Did we talk about energy drinks in the past? We've talked about it off the air, but are you a fan, not a fan? It's okay in moderation?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them. You know, they're loaded with stimulants. They're loaded to just really hop you up. Which is exactly what they want to do. They want to take you in that middle of the afternoon when you're kind of dragging and you know, get you hopped up a little bit. There are some that are better because they're loaded with vitamins as well as the caffeine, but a lot of them really are just trying to get you to get to that energy portion of it. So, and a lot of them are loaded with sugar as well, so you got to be really careful which ones you choose.
Doc, is caffeine addictive?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. Yep.
Is that why we have a headache when we don't have it?
Correct. So you take someone who drinks a lot of coffee and a lot of caffeine, and then you say cold turkey, you're going to stop. They're going to have headaches. They're going to have some withdrawal symptoms. Now, addiction is really that the body craves it and that the body, the brain says, I want to have that, and you get into this routine of doing it. It's not like you're going to continue to do more and more and more. You can hit your addiction and your craving with 2 to 4 cups, and you won't have any of the other bad side effects.
Any coffee questions before we take the break and come back and talk about osteoporosis? It's always got to be about me, doesn't it? Coffee questions.
I just want to know, is tea better than coffee?
Mayor, tea is probably just as good. A lot of people think it is better. You don't get the antioxidants that you get from the coffee, but a lot of people do find tea very soothing and a lot easier on the stomach. So I would say that, you know, if you wanted to go from health benefits, they haven't done all the studies that show all of the decreased risk in cancers from tea that they have in coffee, but it's still an excellent drink.
Good.
Steve, any coffee questions?
The only question I have, and I've been paying attention to the counting calories recently, is when you start adding things to coffee. Uh-oh. Are we just talking about black coffee, or what about a little half and half and sugar? What all of those do to that?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about calories, Steve, because some of these calories, some of the drinks have so high calories. I mean, they're almost like a Big Mac, you know.
Well, it's dessert.
Like you got to be careful when you add all these caramels and all these flavors and the whipped cream and the cream. It is. It gets to be a dessert. So if you're counting calories, really stay with the black coffee or low-fat, sugar-free, you know, some of those additives if you want to watch your calorie intake. Because really, you can get a lot of calories in a single one of those foo-foo fancy Starbucks coffees.
Texter 630, I drink 12 cups of coffee a day, a full pot. I love it.
Wow.
That's a lot.
So yeah. What? 309, what about drinking decaf?
Yeah, decaf, you know, you're still going to get the antioxidants, but you aren't going to get the benefits of the caffeine, obviously. And people have to realize that even though it's decaffeinated, there is still some caffeine in there. So you're going to get some benefit, and you're also possibly going to get caffeine in other portions of your diet as well.
708, caffeinated water.
Yeah. Caffeinated water hasn't been studied to the point of coffee, obviously, because it's really, you know, somewhat new and getting more popular. And again, you aren't going to have the antioxidant benefits that you get from the coffee, but you'll start to see more studies, I think, based on the caffeinated water right now because of that.
773, my Diet Coke brother or sister. What about that as a source?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's pros and cons of diet soda. We've talked about that in the past. You know, you will get the caffeine, but you also get some of the other side effects. And you talk about an addictive drink. You know, diet sodas definitely are. You stop drinking diet sodas, you're going to have that. The other bad thing about diet sodas is all of the studies that have shown that although you're drinking diet sodas, you're going to see your weight increase, and it's usually because of the food that you're eating with the diet soda or the justification that you give yourself, I'm having a diet soda, therefore I can have this. Mm-hmm. So although it's called a diet soda, it really doesn't work as a diet.
Doc, the idea of avoiding coffee in the evening when the hours that we're on the air, getting up early, I try to stay away from it late in the day. on the other hand, I can usually fall asleep fairly easily. But is there any validity to that, to staying away from caffeine after a certain hour?
Absolutely, Dave, 100%. The caffeine is such a stimulant and a stimulant to your brain that really anybody that's going to try to fall asleep really should stop those caffeinated drinks around noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon and not have any caffeinated drinks after that. We talk about all these sleep disorders, and it's probably a subject we should talk about in the future, but a lot of people who have sleep disorders, if you really ask them, they're drinking coffee after their meal, after their dinner meal. You know, that's the time where you might want to have decaffeinated coffee, because that caffeine is such a stimulant and stays in your brain and will keep you awake and not allow you to get the restful sleep that we all need.
Come back, talk a little osteoporosis on a Monday. Hope your knees feel better than mine on most days. More with Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Pursuit of better health care starts here. All right, Doc, so osteoporosis, I've got it in both knees. I don't have any more meniscus. All my meniscus is gone. Remember that blues song I did? I ain't got no more meniscus.
Okay, so let's first clear something up.
Oh, what's that?
You don't have osteoporosis in your knees. You have osteoarthritis in your knees.
Oh, see what I did there? See how I said, Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah,
all right. All right. Good. Now, Osteoporosis Awareness Month. This is, you know, on surface, very important to women, but can't men get it as well?
Absolutely, and that's probably one of the biggest messages we need to get across, is this is not a disease of women. This is a disease of age. So as we age, we don't build our bones back up as much as we normally should, so we reabsorb more instead of build more, and we get weaker bones as we age. So it's men and women. Men just happen to get it a few years later than women.
Is it because we are better at processing calcium and keeping it in our bodies just biologically, or how does that work?
No, actually, the interesting thing, and probably one of the most fascinating things that's come out recently, is the effect of estrogen in women on a portion of their brain that, if that can be blocked, will essentially cure osteoporosis for women. They've done it in mice, so now we just have to get it into humans. But the estrogen appears to have a receptors in the brain that tell bones to stop being rebuilt. So if we can turn that off in women, then they'll have stronger bones. Men obviously wouldn't have the estrogen effect in their brain, but in women it certainly looks like that's why they get it earlier. And this may be actually a cure for it in the future.
Here's a wacky medical fact that Doc told me. Your bones change all the time. Your highest bone density is in the 20s. And after your 20s, your bones dissolve for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's just wild.
How about it? Yeah, so we do. We get our highest bone mass at the age of 20, and then for the next, you know, the rest of your remainder of your life, it's reabsorbed and rebuilt, reabsorbed and rebuilt. But unfortunately, it's reabsorbed faster than it's rebuilt, so we start to see a decrease there. That's why the importance, we talk about osteoporosis in older individuals. We really need to understand that bone health starts in our youth and goes through all our childhood and early adolescence, which is extremely important for bone health in the future.
So why do they tell you to drink milk all the time as a kid, but then when you're an adult, it's not going to help you really?
Well, it doesn't. It's not so much that. I mean, the milk that we want to drink actually as a kid, you know, it's fortified with vitamin D. They are building their bone as much as they possibly can. As we get to an adult, we're saying the fat content in milk is probably worse for our heart. So we need to have the calcium in there, but we don't want all that fat content. The fat content as a child helps us in brain development. So we really want them to take that full vitamin, fully vitamin D fortified whole milk. But as we age, we want to get rid of that fat portion of it. We really want to go with the skim milk, which is fortified with vitamin D, but we don't need the other portions of it.
Salmon's good for calcium as well. And Dave, I don't know why you don't eat kale. Kale's good for you, apparently.
Yeah, it is. It's good. You know, when we look at calcium and we say, okay, what calcium, how do we get it in? Well, obviously in dairy products, but then also salmon is very high in it, and kale is as well. So, I mean, we need to make sure that we take in calcium, and we need to make sure that we have enough vitamin D, because that helps us absorb it. So individuals are not getting outside in the sun or during the winter. We've talked about that, the importance of taking a vitamin D supplement during the winter.
And there's a drug controversy with this as well, with the cost of medication that works. Now, the other thing is you need to be tested for this. Don't assume as a woman or a man getting older that you're definitely going to get it, because that's not necessarily the case. This newest drug that was recently released is called Inenity.
Inenity, yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, so why is it so expensive?
Well, you know, it's expensive because it's brand new, and it's expensive because it's novel. The medications that we normally talk about, Fosamax and Actonel and Reclass, those are all ones that do one side. They're trying to slow the reabsorption. Entity is one of these where it's going to not only slow the reabsorption but build bones stronger. So that's a drug that could be a blockbuster drug, but I'll tell you, if they can figure out this estrogen blocking in the receptors of the brain, that's going to be the blockbuster. That's going to eliminate osteoporosis in women.
We put all the notes that Doc does, and they are extensive, and they're great. You'd be an amateur medical degree if you read all of Doc's notes. We put them up with the podcast, which we post after the show, and Northwestern Medicine is lucky to have you, my friend.
Thanks, Steve. You guys have a great day, and hopefully it'll warm up here. We'll be out of winter soon. So,
yeah, well, don't count it.
Nope.
That's Dr. Kevin Most, and we're coming back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
You know, in the middle of following everything the dopey Trump Twitter feed has to offer, we end up missing discussions on stuff that matters in a big way. I don't disagree with that complaint at all. And I want to bring Congressman Mike Quigley in here. Is he ready to go? Congressman Quigley ready to join us now to talk about a story that his office is on that I think we need to know more about. First, though, Congressman, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be back.
I don't know if you play the ponies at all, but Dave Ennett and I were just talking about the Preakness, and you being a big sports guy, I know you probably saw this, but the jockeyless horse may catch on now. What do you think?
It certainly makes it a little bit more like greyhound dog racing.
Yeah, it does. It was a bad weekend for jockeys. I'm thinking about electric cars. I own a horse. I'm watching that going, do I really need the little guy? Do I?
Yeah, cut costs, right?
Sure.
All right, so Congressman Quigley, did you talk to the new mayor yet?
We met in Washington, D.C. Obviously, I supported her in the runoff, and we've had a couple conversations. I would just wish her the best and look forward to trying to help her address all our issues.
Plenty of them here to work on, as you know. Now, an audit report for the Graceland Annex of the Post Office in Chicago is released. What was found?
This just in, mail service bad in Chicago. There's today's newsflash. Look, I've been doing this in one manner or another, service issues in Chicago since 82. And one of the themes, the consistencies, is bad mail service, misdelivered mail, no mail at all, late delivery. So became a chairman in January of a subcommittee and just decided, all right, met with the inspector general, ordered a review by the post office inspector general, and a couple of things. You know, we finally quantified Chicago ranked last out of 67 districts throughout the country on whether or not mail was delivered before 5 o'clock, and among other things, obviously, undelivered mail, misdelivered mail, and obviously some management issues. A lot of this is because the machines downtown and the sorting facilities weren't manned enough, they weren't operating enough, but and some misrepresentations at the local level of what's happening with the mail.
This is a fairly standardized practice. The mail comes in, it's processed in a particular way, it goes out at a particular time, and it's delivered to specific places. So the only answer here is personnel, personnel and management of personnel. What else could it be?
Well, that's a lot of it. Personally, I think that most of the carriers are hardworking, dedicated public
service. Well, there's no question.
It's a tough job. Now, so you're right. It's a management issue by and large. What you need is more review, more staffing, a better understanding of the issue. And I'll say this. It is rare that a service steps up and says, you're absolutely right. But that's what happened. They did come to us in D.C., the Chicago folks and the national folks, and they have put in place a bunch of changes. And if we accomplish nothing else, it's they have decided to make a tremendous number of changes, some of them already in place, some of them with some positive results. You know, our job is to make sure that they keep those changes in place. You know, they're improving by some other processes, the ability to respond to calls, to complaints. They're sending mail out saying this is where you do call, because most people wouldn't know where to call where their local station is. They formed an advisory council. And one of the better things is they got rid of these auxiliary routes. Believe it or not, Chicago had a couple dozen routes in which there's no regular carrier, and they're sort of served after everybody else is done, guaranteeing really poor service, later service. So I think we're going to notice improvements there. A lot more additional training, more staff, and they retrofitted some of the sorting facilities, sorting machines downstairs.
How much does this have to do with the post office going broke?
Well, I think that there were those that wanted the Postal Service to fail. You know, there was a time when it seemed inevitable, when, you know, everyone's doing email, nobody's writing letters, and the only thing you get is junk mail. But obviously, as technology changes, the scenery changes behind us. We're now seeing what? Amazon trying to have people quit, start their own service to deliver.
Yep.
So the Postal Service can be a thriving entity again. I think our job is to make sure they're managed well, they have the ability to resource well, to meet what's going to be an extraordinary burden and challenge of so many additional package services. So this is at least the beginning. The service recognizes they have a problem. They're putting some changes in place. Congress's job is not to hamstring them and help them get to the resources they need to do the job right.
It's Congressman Mike Quigley. I want to play something for you. As you know, over the weekend, the Republican Congressman Justin Amash from Michigan came out and said Trump ought to be impeached. And he said most of Congress hasn't even read the Mueller report, let alone taken any action on it. And for him to stand up and say it, you know, he's labeled as courageous. Look, it's politics. Courage is a pretty strong word, but it is gutsy to be the first guy out to stand up for it. So the question is, what are the Democrats doing? Tom Steyer, the billionaire investor, invested in a commercial. I'll put you on hold so you can hear this, Congressman, then I'll pick back up. Here's the spot.
This is a message
for leaders of the Democratic Party. For over 2 years, this president has broken the law.
And nothing happened.
You told us to wait for the Mueller investigation.
And when he showed obstruction of justice,
nothing happened.
When this president
took money from foreign governments
and blocked the release of his tax returns,
nothing happened.
And when his administration illegally refused to testify,
nothing happened. Now you tell us to wait for the next election?
Really?
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 This is why we volunteered,
raised money,
went door to door,
and voted in the last election.
Our founding fathers expected you,
Congress,
to hold a lawless president accountable.
And you're doing nothing.
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 He broke his oath of office.
He's defying you.
He's laughing at you.
And he's getting away with it.
This is our democracy.
But Congress is part of the system, and the system is broken. We have to fix it.
That's from Need.
Impeach is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That's from Need, the number two, Impeach. Now, yeah, Congressman Quigley, you have been on Trump since the moment he got to office, calling him out rightfully on all the things he's done. And I know how you feel in general, but what does that make you think? Because that should scare the hell out of Democrats.
You know, it does, but a couple things. Had we gone forward with impeachment when these commercials started, or when some of my colleagues filed articles for impeachment a year and a half ago, we wouldn't have known anything about Manafort, Flynn, mm-hmm. Cohen, and obviously this report. So there's a time and place to move forward. I think Democrats are warming to it. I just want folks to remember, this isn't a vote just in the House of Representatives. It's a vote in the Senate. And there aren't the votes there.
I get that, but that's politics. And here's what I want Democrats to hear, and I know you get this, so I'm not lecturing you. Just hear me out.
Yeah.
America wants to see Congress stand up and do its job. And America isn't all that concerned about whether or not you guys get reelected. Rightfully so, because they want you, and I know you feel this way, they want you to be more concerned about them than you are about keeping your job. And as you know, many of your colleagues are way too concerned about keeping their job and way more concerned about that than they are about the public that voted them in. I maintain that moving on this and using your congressional oversight, regardless of the outcome, is going to be a positive into the election than sitting back and waiting for 2020, because people are pissed.
Sure. You know, I've spent 2 years, as you know, on the committee doing the investigation. You will see action this week on the president's refusal to respond to subpoenas. So we're going to use every lawful mean toward that end to get the president to respond. The information that the public saw this week about Deutsche Bank is ripe. So it's not just getting the subpoenas answered. A lot of this has to do with the fact that this investigation began as a counterintelligence investigation. Was the president of the United States compromised? And I think what you saw with this story about those in Deutsche Bank questioning the Trump organization's use and possibility of money laundering is going to come out. So I think, bottom line, Democratic leadership is warming to this notion of impeachment. I've never ruled it out. I just want us to not backfire and actually help, as impeachment proceedings did under the Clinton administration.
It's Congressman Mike Quigley. Thanks for the information on the post office, and we'll get you a riderless horse sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks. That's Congressman Quigley. And that Tom Steyer commercial, need to impeach, need the number two impeach, .com.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by MegaPros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
Her name is Latoya Gates Vaughn. Is it Vaughn or Van? There we go. Latoya, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Sorry, that was my fault. Latoya Gates Van or Vaughn?
Van.
All right. Nice to talk to you. Your not-for-profit is called Planting Seeds of Promise. You got your first event coming up May 25th in Tent City. Assisting you are going to be volunteers, active duty members from the Navy base in North Chicago, giving out food and clothes and necessities for underprivileged residents of Tent City. Where's your motivation coming from for all this good work?
You know, a lot of my motivation to help people is just coming from just growing up with my family. We didn't have it all. We didn't have it all. We didn't have it all the time. And we were people who benefited from eating at food pantries and at times had to stay at shelters and received toys from, you know, organizations like Toys for Tots and different churches. And those people just never made us feel bad or made us feel less than. So I just always made a promise to myself when I was in a situation and I was older and in a better financial situation, I just wouldn't turn my back, but I would definitely reach back and just try to give hope to people who may be feeling hopeless.
I know you don't want to make this about you, but it's got to feel awfully good to be in that position now.
It feels amazing. It feels amazing. It feels amazing to be in this position right now.
So how do we help you?
You know what? People can help in many ways. They can log on to, we have a website where people can go on the website and they can read more about us. They can click the link and donate, and that website is www.plantingseedsofpromise.net. And people can shoot me an email if they want to volunteer, if they have questions, and our email address is plantingseedsofpromise@gmail.com. I apologize.
No worries, no worries. And as you say, to inspire a community of people through honesty, integrity, and dedication, you must plant seeds and never underestimate the power of a planted seed. It's a great way to pay it forward. Planting Seeds of Promise. You were all nervous about coming on the show, and look how well you did.
I know. I was really nervous. I was worried about just being perfectly poised.
You nailed it.
Saying the right things. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to let it all hang out.
You nailed it. Listen, hundreds of thousands of people are very impressed with you. I can tell you all those people now because you would have panicked before. Way to go. Hold the line. You're the most valuable person on the planet. And Steve Grzanik is standing by in the newsroom. Steve, we have to, of course, also recognize this morning's billionaire is the most valuable person on the planet. Does a commencement speech yesterday. Robert Smith, right?
That's Robert F. Smith, right.
Mm-hmm. Robert Smith, an investment genius who happens to be worth about $5 billion, does a commencement at Morehouse in Atlanta. There's, what, 400 graduates? What did you tell me this morning?
396.
So they're just paying attention, most of them anyway, listening to the commencement address. Nice thing. Guy's up there, and he goes, oh, by the way, talk to my family, and our family foundation is going to pay off all of your student loans.
Boom.
That's that's the best commencement address you get.
I bet he had to repeat it a couple times because people are probably like, did I just hear that? If the ones who are dozing off.
Well, what's funny is he sort of undersold it. You know, and if you hear the speech, he didn't exactly pound it. He sort of undersold it. And you could see the, I mean, a lot of people heard it right away. And they were thinking, well, this can't be true. And then they're looking around, they're talking to each other. And then they all started chanting MVP. Pretty cool.
There's a couple of students who were interviewed for the Atlanta newspaper for this. One of them has a debt of $70,000.
And it's gone.
Wiped away.
Gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes their world. Seniors leaving, going out, and now they're going to be able to get to work, have families, and do the things they want to do and need to do and to help us all in life and not have to worry about being so far underwater. So that is a good man. Our co-MVPP, if you will. Now, we'll come back in a moment and get you your headlines. Still to come, who won the PGA picks on this show? I'll give you a hint. She's not here today, and she's contagious. But headlines are next on 720 WGN.
Our founding fathers expected you,
Congress, to hold a lawless president accountable.
And you're doing nothing.
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 He broke his oath of office.
He's defying you.
He's laughing at you.
And he's getting away with it.
This is our democracy.
But Congress is part of the system, and the system is broken. We have to fix it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Again, that's from Tom Steyer, the billionaire. Because some people thought I was going to run for a while. I mean, why not get in now? There's only about 500 Democrats already in.
That's it.
But that's a very powerful explainer, if you will, of how an awful lot of people in this country feel, as our friend Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. I'm talking to you from Montgomery, Alabama today, and I've been with Bernie Sanders for the last 4 days on a southern swing of a road trip. So a beautiful morning in Montgomery, if you've ever been here before. Nice little town.
Yeah, I spent a little time in Alabama. Of course, they're under the gun of the spotlight and the abortion law their goofy state government put forward. But let me ask you about that Tom Steyer thing and Justin Amash. You know, not a lot of, speaking of the word courage as we were earlier, not a lot of courageous Republicans stepping up and going, ooh, Justin, I'm with you.
Well, the point I was going to make, Steve, is there's not a lot of courageous 2020 Democratic candidates who are doing the same as well.
I tweeted
yesterday when Amash put out his lengthy tweet thread about his thoughts about impeachment that he's gone a lot further than most of the 2020 Democratic field. In fact, I think Elizabeth Warren is the only one that's formally said that, you know, that impeachment proceedings should go forward. So this is an outlier, not just among Republicans, but among a lot of Democrats as well. And I think what was most interesting about what Amash said in that tweet thread was he kind of laid out the legal argument for making that happen. And Amash is kind of a cerebral guy. He's a libertarian more than he is a Republican. It's not too big of a surprise if you're going to point to a Republican that breakaway, it would be Amash. But, you know, you're right. There's not a ton of people rushing to support him and saying this is the path forward. He definitely is on an island, not just with the Republicans, but within a lot of just members of Congress in general, and especially the people running for president.
This is precisely the problem with the Democrats. And you know, you've got a guy who is so eminently beatable in the guy that is currently occupying the White House. And the Democrats can't get out of their own way. They can't find enough candidates to run. The mayor of New York City has gotten in now, and nobody asked him. And, you know, when Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks, was going to announce an independent run, the Democrats started screaming at him like, it's our turn. Which is exactly why Hillary didn't get elected. And then in the meantime, on top of that, you see what Tom Steyer is trying to do. I maintain, as I've said before, Ryan, and I think we talked about this, this is not about a successful removal of Trump from office. This is about constitutional oversight and doing what you have to do. And if the House Democrats don't do it, they're going to be in huge trouble.
Well, and I think, Steve, a lot of people don't necessarily understand what it means to start articles of impeachment. You know, impeachment is like a grand jury to a certain extent. This isn't about, you know, formally, if a president gets impeached, he doesn't leave office. Remember, Bill Clinton was impeached.
Right.
What impeachment does is it opens the door for a legal process that the Congress can begin to kind of get all this information that they're looking for. You know, you want to see President Trump's tax returns. The best way to do that would be through impeachment. And impeachment has such a negative connotation for a lot of different reasons, but everyone is afraid to go down that road because it sounds like such a toxic word, because it is the beginning of the process of removing a president. But it is also kind of the judicial process, right? It's the opportunity for the president or whoever is in this position to have their side heard as well. It's the trial, essentially. And so, you know, I agree with you that I think that people kind of confuse exactly what impeachment means. And if the Democrats took that step, that it would at least open the door to allow them to begin a true investigative process instead of this kind of hodgepodge of different things from different committees that doesn't have kind of a central focus. And I think that allows President Trump to kind of attack it and make it look like a kangaroo court. And it just doesn't appear to be that effective right now.
Yeah, and keep in mind, there is no acquittal of guilt. There is no exoneration. That's not what the Mueller report said. Not even close. Read the report. It's going to be interesting to see what Mueller has to say when he does finally testify. We got a date on that? June 9th? Is that what it is?
I don't know if they've formally announced a date, but the thought process is that they're hoping he comes in sometime in June. And one other point I'd make about that is, you know, there are a lot of members of Congress that view the Mueller report as the document to spur impeachment, right? So that's and to begin that process of taking the next step of deciding whether or not the president obstructed justice. And, you know, I think the thing everybody goes back to is, was the point that Mueller was making, and he probably could have been a little bit more clear, is that the only reason I'm not suggesting the president be indicted is because there is a Justice Department guidance that says you can't indict a sitting president. So here's this document, Congress, you do what you're supposed to do. The process is impeachment. It's not indictment. So I think you're right, Steve. The way to find the answer to exactly what Mueller was thinking is to get him in front of a congressional committee and have him answer that question.
All right, hang with me, Ryan. We'll come back and do more in a second. The Democrats look confused and gutless now, and that's kind of a bad position to be in because they gave away the lead. For Super Joe's White Sox question of the week. What are we giving away there, Super Joe?
We have a family pack of four tickets to see the Sox play the Cleveland Indians on Friday, May 31st at 7:10. Tune in every Monday morning at 7:50 for a chance to win tickets to a White Sox game. For schedule and ticket information, visit whitesox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME.
Ryan Nobles is standing by on hold. He is not eligible to play, but we will get him tickets if he needs them. Meanwhile, what's your question?
White Sox pitcher Lucas Giolito was credited with a complete game Saturday after the matchup with the Blue Jays was shortened due to rain. It was the team's first five-inning complete game since a particularly sweaty individual recorded one back in April of 2006. Excuse me. Which pitcher did so?
Oh, it's too bad that Sandberg's not here.
Indeed it is.
312-981-7200, first correct answer is a winner. Ryan Noble, CNN, I didn't watch Game of Thrones, but I am a little surprised that they didn't give Bernie Sanders a walk-on. He looked angry. He looked like a Game of Thrones character to me.
In fact, Ruby Kramer, who's a colleague of mine that works at BuzzFeed, actually asked whether or not Bernie Sanders watches Game of Thrones, and we were told, probably unsurprisingly, that he is not a habitual watcher or watcher of all of Game of Thrones. So Bernie doesn't have time for kind of pop culture stuff. He's too focused on passing Medicare for all. That's his main focus in life.
Is there a grumpiness about the success Biden has had so far because Sanders is not the number one guy?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I talk to the campaign on a regular basis, and so this isn't just lip service from them, because this is what they were telling us before Biden got in, and their message on this is pretty consistent after, and that is that they were expecting the polls to kind of fluctuate and go up and down a little bit, and they knew that Biden was going to come in with a ton of momentum behind him, and that they're playing a long game here. They do this as a, you know, slow and steady wins the race, and then they know that Bernie's got a rock solid base of support, and that there's going to come a time where everybody's going to kind of sample the new candy that's put on the shelf in the Democratic field, and then eventually everything's going to kind of even out. We're going to get into debates, and that's when the real race begins. So they're not worried about it. I mean, the big difference between Bernie Sanders and even Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, some of these top-tier candidates, is that he's always going to have the money. And as long as he has the money, he can stick it out a lot longer and kind of absorb the waves of this campaign a little bit better than some of the other candidates can. That being said, I don't think that they anticipated that Biden was going to come out of the gates as strong as he did. And you've seen Sanders right away begin to draw distinctions between himself and Biden. So they're aware that Biden's doing well, but the message is they're just going to keep pushing forward as they'd always planned.
It's Ryan Nobles from CNN. Thank you as always. As you know, it's a historic day here in Chicago as Lori Lightfoot becomes the new mayor in about an hour and a half here.
Wow, big hours, day actually. In Chicago. Yeah. All right, well, have a great week, guys.
Thank you, bud. That's Ryan Nobles. And we'll do the latest Steve Cochran podcast, the Everything Podcast, after the show today. Get them all at WGNradio.com/Cochran. Coming up, Stories That Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me good.
Sound the alarms. A moron has escaped. He's an international moron. Dean Richards is live in London. Good morning, Dean.
I'm spreading the word of moronness around the globe today, Steve.
Let's be in
England this morning.
Let's be grammatically correct. It's moranity.
Moranity?
Yeah, moranity. Yeah, more moranity. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Moranity.
You know, Dean, I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't think you do either.
No, I do not.
But I had some ideas that I pitched HBO for the final and episode last night. I don't know if they took up any of them. But Arjen Stark, Benjen, Catelyn, Eddard, the whole Stark family, I thought they should form a family band. You know,
like the Partridge family.
Yeah, and just go to various lands where there's war and just sing their little hearts out. So I don't know if they did that.
Yeah.
And then Peter Dinklage, funniest name of any celebrity. Peter Dinklage played a character named Tyrion Lannister, and I thought because of all the publicity in the last couple of weeks, he ought to open a Starbucks. The Game of Thrones Starbucks. I mean, that just makes total sense to me.
That makes sense. I don't know if you heard one of the alternative endings. This is no spoiler alert because it wasn't on the air at all, but Peter Dinklage, the original ending of last night's episode, was supposed to feature Peter Dinklage waking up in his bed and Suzanne Plachette is next to him.
That's
and
solid.
It turns out the whole thing was a dream. The whole eight years of it all was a big dream.
Well, here's a couple other ideas. And again, I don't watch the show. Jon Snow moves to Florida because he's tired of the winter. I mean, come on.
That makes perfect sense.
Daenerys Targaryen, she starts a show with, what's his name? Andy, the Real Housewives of Westeros. You know, and it's all the women from Game of Thrones. Oh, and everybody wanted to know who ended up on the Iron Throne? Yeah. Ryan Seacrest. It was Ryan Seacrest because he gets every job.
Instead of saying Game of Thrones, I think if you're like super hip, you're just supposed to say G-O-T.
Oh, well, clearly I
know. Because you're too busy to say the actual words.
Well, that's so too much like say, AGT. Mm-hmm. America's Got Talent. It's
fantastic.
Kind of very similar. Right.
Is it big in London, Game of Thrones?
You know what? It has the finale has not been on here yet.
Oh, you should ruin it for people.
I should just go around all day and tell people what happened. If only I knew, because I could care less myself.
That's the thing.
But there was one bar here in London at 2 a.m. this morning. They got some sort of satellite feed, probably illegal. I don't know. But they, if you wanted to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you could go to that to watch Game of Thrones when it was on HBO last night. Or otherwise, it's going to be on at 9 o'clock here in London tonight. So maybe there'll be... I don't get a sense of, like, the crazy GOT mania. It seems like... I'll tell you a couple of things that I noticed. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of Game of Thrones mania here. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of royal baby mania here, or royal couple, or all the stuff that we Americans are all obsessing over. The people here just don't seem to be as interested as we are in America.
Yeah, so they're just getting on with their lives.
Yes, I guess so. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem very healthy to me. You can't be distracted by a reality show or, you know, somebody else's royal life. I don't. What's the purpose of living, really?
I think that's exactly right. I want to hear all about London. You can tell us all that in a second. But Saturday Night Live, Cecily Strong doesn't get enough credit. She is so good. And she's overshadowed a little bit because there's a tremendous female cast on SNL, even when the material's not great. But she doused Colin Jost with water that was supposed to be booze on Weekend Update when she was playing a drunken Fox News judge/anchor. I mean, she was brilliant. Anyway, I just think she's really good. And, of course, she did a lot of time here in Chicago and was born, I think, in Springfield.
Colin Jost, who got engaged to Scarlett Johansson over the weekend.
Is that wise? Hadn't she been down that road a couple times?
She's not been lucky in love, let's just say.
Do you think possibly that Colin Jost has made the mistake that all men make? They go, well, I can change her. You know how we are. We go into those relationships, we go, I can change her.
Maybe it was the other guy, Steve. Maybe it's not her fault. Maybe it was Ryan Reynolds. Maybe it was some of the other people that she's dated through the years.
See, that's the same thing.
Why put the blame on her?
Same thing you told me about Halle Berry, and that was the roughest month of my life. I'm still surprised I'm not a hostage. I'm telling you right now. So I was listening to your show yesterday when you called into it live from London. We'll talk about that and the rest of your London escapades in just a moment. There's another royal wedding this weekend, and I mean, as you said, not a lot of people are paying attention to it there. And the Queen's coming up on 75 years on the throne, which means she needs more fiber. It's 8:20. What's coming up at 8:30?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The Clash. John Ross Bowie is going to be in see us live in studio after 9 o'clock. Some of you are going, wait, I know the name. Do I know the face? Yeah, you do. Kripke from Big Bang Theory. Be live in studio. So if you got a question.
Don't you mean Kripke?
Kripke, that's right. Well, that's what I want to ask him. Where'd that voice come from?
you do have to ask him about that. I actually made the same mistake that you just did a moment ago. Is the way that you pronounce his last name is actually Bowie.
Oh, it's Bowie.
But it's spelled Bowie, like Bowie. So I said the same thing, and he was, you know, polite when he, you know, basically in his polite way said, "Numbskull, that's not how you pronounce this."
Well, you know, I think if you're going to spell it that way, you're going to have to change it.
I think so, but yeah. I was trying to just write on my notes then how to do it phonetically. There's really no way to do that phonetically for Bowie, except you have to think of bow like how. That's the way that I remember.
Right, but when you write out B-O-W, it's bow.
Yeah, exactly. But he's got good stories about the speech affectation, how that started. He's a very, very nice person. But he's not eating crumpets right now.
Are you having tea and crumpets or just crumpets?
I'm just having crumpets. I'm trying to be like a little rebellious.
Wild man. So where are you staying? Midtown? Are you you by the palace? Where are you?
I'm just right down the street from the Parliament. All those arguments, those crazy arguments take place. You know, for such a civilized people, they do a lot of yelling in their parliament.
There's probably nothing more entertaining on TV than Question Time with the Prime Minister, which I think airs originally on Sunday nights on C-SPAN. Anyway, just Google up Question Time, and it's very entertaining. If we had that in Congress, can you imagine how much fun that would be if Trump had to go over?
No.
Oh, it'd be tremendous.
That would be fantastic to see.
All right, so you talked to everybody from the Elton John movie. First off, you saw the movie. Can you talk about it?
I saw the movie, and I will tell you, I cannot wait for this to open on May 31st so everybody else can also see how great it is.
Oh, cool.
It's not like other biopics. It's not everyone's saying, oh, it's going to be just like Bohemian Rhapsody. It's not really. It's, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody kind of followed Freddie Mercury's life in order for the most part. You know, this happened and then this happened in his life. And then after that, you know, this happened kind of in a straight chronology. But this Elton John movie kind of jumps all over the place, and it's done more like a play where there are fantasy sequences that take place also that, that to me, it worked very well. It was like watching a musical on stage. That's how they performed this.
So it's a different way of telling the story. The narrative they chose works.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Very much so. You learn a lot of behind-the-scenes things about Elton John. You learn about his life, what motivated him, about some very dysfunctional parents, the early part of his career, rampant alcohol and drug use in his career, and all of these hits, that, you know, this massive number of hits that he's had that's made him a number one star around the world. This actor, Taron Egerton, does such a good job playing Elton John in this movie. It's not an over-the-top performance. It's subtle, but it's so effective and very emotional, and at times very funny. And the music, you'll be singing along through the whole movie, you know, which is great because that drowns out the sound of people wrestling their cellophane bags of candy. So it's nice to have that distraction going on.
But all the movie theaters there have fresh crumpets.
All they have here, you go up to the concession stand, try to get some popcorn. All they have is tea and crumpets.
That's it. You can look it up. All right. So the deal with this movie is that Elton John was on board from the beginning, or not so much, because he certainly seems to be on board now.
Oh, he's the executive producer of the movie. I mean, this is all his baby. This whole project. So he's 100% on board. There's been some criticism that a gay actor should have played him in the movie instead of Taron Egerton, who is not gay.
That's ridiculous.
Elton John, over the weekend, there was, you know, they showed the film. The world premiere was at the Cannes Film Festival in the south of France a couple of days ago, where it got standing ovations and people went wild. And Elton John addressed that, saying, you know, that it's ridiculous that he chose Taron Egerton for this because he's felt like he was the best guy to play this. Taron Egerton has said he would understand why people feel that way, but, you know, he's an actor. He's hired to play different things that are not necessarily part of his own life.
It's like saying gay people shouldn't be allowed to play straight parts. It's just dumb.
That's stupid. Yeah, the whole thing is. I mean, it's acting. You're supposed to act like somebody else. It's not real life. It's not a statement on anything. But that's the only criticism that this movie has gotten so far. The reviews have been overwhelmingly great. Not just me raving about this movie. Everyone loved it. I sat down and talked with Taron Egerton, a really, really nice guy. I've been interviewing. I'll bet I've interviewed him a half a dozen times or so for smaller movies that he's been in. He is such a nice guy, and this is going to put him on a different level. He's definitely going to be nominated for an Oscar for this.
Wow.
It's that strong of a performance. It opens May 31st, and today, in fact, it's, 2:30 in the afternoon here right now. In about an hour and a half, I'm going to head over to the London premiere of Rocket Man, where Elton John will be, and I'll talk with him on the red carpet. And is there anything special you'd like me to ask him?
I would certainly like you to bring up Jim Toronto's name. Oh, wait, no, that was Jim who wanted you to bring up his name. So Elton Jim was filling in for Dean yesterday, and Dean called into his own show. And I agree with you 1,000%. Dave, you didn't hear this, I don't think, but Elton Jim wanted Dean to bring up his name to Elton John, and Dean rightfully said, well, how exactly would that work?
Elton John comes up to you on the red carpet, and you go, Elton, what do you think about Jim from Chicago, Elton Jim from Chicago. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, but
what are your thoughts? Pro or con?
Didn't he actually call out Elton Jim at a concert here?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure he hasn't thought about him nonstop since then.
I don't know. He's kind of a stalker.
You know, if it was a sit down interview, if I had a half an hour with
him, you go.
I could see where you'd bring that up. But this is on a red carpet where if I get like 2 minutes with him, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah, you know, you should be thrown out if you bring up Elton Jim's name on the red carpet. By the way, Dean brought up a point. I guess Elton Jim brought up a point, but I agree with you 1,000% on this as well. Dean's point is, as huge as Elton John is, and keep in mind what a big Billy Joel fan you are, and I am, Dave, a big, big Prince fan.
Yeah, I love Elton John.
And Elton John as well. But Elton John is not the Beatles, is not Sinatra, is not Elvis. He's not a world-changing artist. He's one of the great artists of all time. He's not Michael Jackson. There are people who change culture that didn't just make hits. It's no knock on Elton John, but I agree with you, Dean. There's like three or four of those on the top.
Yeah, and there's just a handful of people who not only made great music, but actually changed the world, changed the way that we dressed and walked and talked and thought. Sinatra did it for the Bobby Soxers. Elvis did it for the generation after that. The Beatles after that. Michael Jackson after that. But after Michael Jackson, I can't really think of anybody who is at that level. Not to say that Elton John is not fantastic. Huge. Bruce Springsteen is not fantastic. Prince is not fantastic. But it's a different way. But you know, Elton Jim lives and breathes this. Mm-hmm. He's gone to 200 shows or whatever, something like that now. So he looks at it differently. He's wrong, but he looks at it differently.
I'm told Dexy's Midnight Runner should also be in the conversation. Big hit, Con Eileen.
Yeah. Oddly enough, you think that the name Dexy isn't used very much, but just this morning in London, I ran into five guys named Dexy.
I'm not surprised. They're so lost over there. Hey, if you see Paul Coit, say hello. That's Dean. When are you back, by the way?
I'm coming back on Wednesday.
All right. Well, we hear from you tomorrow from London.
Yes, you will hear from me tomorrow from London. Excellent. I'm going to try to see if we can get some sound for you from Elton John from the red carpet, see if we can figure out a way to transfer that over. I'll talk to you tomorrow from London. I will be traveling on Wednesday and back at WGN talking to you from there
on Thursday. On Thursday with jet lag. Hey, bring my name up, Elton John. I'll talk to you later. That's Dean Richards live from London.
The Steve Cochran Show. Cochran Show.
John Ross Bowie. Quipke from Big Bang Theory. In town doing Four Chords and a Gun. He'll be in studio after 9. Mindy Rickles doing stand-up. I think she's in Vegas again. I don't know. We'll talk to Mindy about it coming up later on. And I don't know that I've talked to her since Don died. It's been a while. Dave's yogurt was stolen. That's obviously a big topic around here. We got the finals.
Wanted posters are up around the station.
They are.
Yep.
We got the finals from the PGA Championship picks we have to do. And joining us in the studio right now, the lovely and talented Scott Paddock, the boss at, one of the finest speedways in America. Which speedway would that be, Scott?
Well, we've got two of them. We've got, if you like the oval track racing, Chicagoland Speedway. And if you like the straight line racing, that's Route 66 Raceway, if you're a drag racing fan.
And that's what we're talking about here.
You got it. The fastest form of motorsports on the planet returns to Chicago with their one and only visit May 30th through June 2nd in a couple short weeks here.
What are the speeds we're talking about?
So they will go from 0 to 335 miles an hour in under 4 seconds. So it's analogous to what an astronaut feels during liftoff on the space shuttle, 5 Gs. But the difference is they feel that on takeoff, and then once they pull that parachute, they feel the same thing in reverse. So think about the physical duress they're under.
Well, I mean, the athleticism of that, because, God bless the astronauts, some of the greatest heroes of our lifetimes, but they're not running it at takeoff. They're sitting there going, hold on. These guys are driving the car. That's, and these women as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of women in this sport who stand out. Brittany Force, Courtney Force.
Yeah, talk about the Force family for a second, because honestly, I was unfamiliar with them until that Bryant Gumbel Real Sports piece about a year ago.
Yeah, it's remarkable. John Force, the patriarch of the family, he's pushing 70 years old, believe it or not. Keeps himself in phenomenal shape, and that's why he's able to continue to do this. And he's got three daughters, all who and couple son-in-laws now who are involved in the sport, and he enjoys going to work every day and wants to pass his legacy on in very, very good hands. But it's remarkable. He's won 16 world championships, and I remember him saying a couple years ago when he was in town, no disrespect to Michael Jordan, but he only won 6.
Right. Well, and here's the thing, the world of drag racing has changed, like the world of NASCAR, and the world of IndyCar racing has changed as well. When you were a kid, when I was a kid, wasn't it Big Daddy Don Garlitz? That was the guy?
That's right. He was our Grand Marshal last year, and we're thrilled to announce that Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney, probably another
tremendous
name you and Dave know, is going to be gracing us with her presence as our Grand Marshal this year, one of the female pioneers of the sport.
How is the business of drag racing?
It's solid. I mean, what's great about it is the format. So on Friday and Saturday, there's two dual qualifying sessions. So you watch about 45 minutes of action, and then the duress on those engines is so intense that they literally have to rebuild them from scratch. And so you get a front row seat. They say every ticket is a pit pass, and you get to watch that as they rebuild them in what's called Nitro Alley, the fan midway section. And music and entertainment and sponsor engagement is a big part of that. And then you do it all over again. So for fans today, particularly younger fans with a shorter attention span, the format of this sport is very conducive.
So how do you rebuild an engine in the period of time that you have between opportunities?
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, this is science. I mean, to get an engine to perform and hit those speeds, I mean, that is technology at its finest.
Right.
And think about this on Championship Sunday on live TV, where you are on the clock 45 minutes, you've got to turn that around and get that dragster back to the starting line, or you're disqualified. You talk about pressure.
So, NASCAR, there's a backup car. IndyCar racing, there's a backup car. Do they bring backup dragsters?
They do.
Okay,
do.
But this is part of the competition. To retool the engine to make sure it's good to
go? Yep.
So that really involves the pit crew and the mechanics in a way that aren't in other sports.
They have to check every pit rod, every piston, and rebuild it from scratch to make sure that the next pass can hit that speed again. I mean, think about that, 335 miles an hour in 4 seconds.
I can't do that on 88.
No, but you've come close. Yeah, zero to 330. Yeah, is there less of a danger factor in drag racing than there is in other motorsports?
I think from the standpoint that you're not driving with 40 other drivers around you. So NASCAR, which we'll be visiting at the end of June, they'll hit speeds of about 195 miles per hour at our track, and you've got 40 drivers nose to nose. So I think what's different, Dave, is you're at the mercy of someone else's mistake on that oval track, whereas on the drag strip, it's pretty much you. Yeah, you've got that other car in the next lane, but you keep it straight and you keep those gears clicking and you should be okay.
The aerodynamics of the car, of the vehicle, I mean, it's rocket-like, obviously, but you don't want it going straight up and down. And the crazy accidents that we've seen, which are really breathtaking because it's amazing people can survive, are when those cars get a little air in the wrong spots, right?
That's right. And, you know, you mentioned the name Don Garlitz, Steve. He was one of the safety pioneers in the sport.
Is that right?
He's the guy that figured out, you know, don't put the engine in front, put it in the back of the driver. Don't put it in the back, put it in the front. Balance out the speeds or the weight distribution on that car, because that was the problem. At those speeds, they were going airborne, and all hell was breaking loose. So in NHRA and NASCAR, safety has been a big part of it. I mean, since Dale Earnhardt Sr. passed away in 2001, there hasn't been a death in any of the three major touring series of NASCAR, so safety's been a big part of the sport.
The Route 66 Raceway is still the best stadium course anywhere, right?
You got it. Built, no expense was spared 21 years ago when it was built, and it's still considered the first true stadium of drag racing, purpose-built. Keep the acoustics in, the sights, the sounds, and don't forget the smell of nitromethane in the air.
You know, I'm wearing a little bit of that this morning. How do we get tickets?
You can go onto the website, route66raceway.com, or call 888-629-RACE. Best tickets available right now.
And the events, again, go for which days?
May 30th through June 2nd.
Okay, it's kind of a busy weekend, kids, so it's going to be a good way to spend it.
That's right. School's out.
And the big closer of an event is when? On the afternoon of the 2nd?
That's right. Championship Sunday. Things kick off 9 a.m. Sunday morning, and going to be Shirley Muldowney will give the command to get things going, and we'll do that single bracket elimination.
I know you've driven you know, a couple of these vehicles in the past. Have you ever tried a dragster?
I haven't. I can't fit in it. I literally, well, I can fit in a NASCAR stock car at 6'8".
6'8"?
Cannot fit in one of these dragsters. There's just too much leg on this frame.
So how tall could you be and be a dragster driver?
I want to say, and you don't see a lot of tall ones, but I got to believe if you're pushing 6'1", 6'2", you're going to be challenged to get in
there.
It's
going to be tight.
Yeah.
And the Force girls are still, at least one of them is still racing?
Yeah, so Brittany Force races the Top Fuel dragsters. Courtney, who is married to Graham Rahal in the IndyCar, she's taking some time off. Rumors she's going to start a family, but John and Brittany will be there in full force.
Yeah, and I think you can see that Force family piece on HBO On Demand if you search Real Sports. The amazing thing about it was a guy that's been around the sport as long as he has, John Force we're talking about, when it was brought up to him about, do you worry about the safety of your daughters doing this? He got very emotional.
Yeah.
A little hard to talk about it. But, you know, that's the ultimate, right? You want to encourage your kids to follow whatever their dream is, even at 335 miles an hour.
That's right.
Right?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, when Courtney was, so John and Courtney would frequently duel against each other in one of those championship eliminations on Sunday. So not only do you have the stress of your daughter racing, but
you
she's in the next lane.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, and as a dad, do you throw it? Remember the first time you let Steven win in one-on-one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
some point
you do. You do. Scott, things heat up at Chicagoland Speedway later in the month.
That's right. June 27th through the 30th, the NASCAR Summer Festival weekend returns, and we kick off the second half of the NASCAR season. Going to be a lot of fun. We've got everything from barbecue competitions to, in fact, WGN's own Dane Neal is helping orchestrate that for us. And we've got an Olympic-style swimming pool out there and a full-on carnival. So it's going to be a big summer festival with a race going on, by the way.
Well, and you know, my brother Mickey, a huge NASCAR fan because of Scott and everybody, he got to see his first NASCAR race last year. You know, and I got to tell you, and again, people know this if they've gone, there's nothing like it in person.
Yeah.
You know, you can't describe it.
You
got to be there. You got to feel it. And there's something out there that's like a mountain of nachos that you have to see, which is almost as amazing as the race itself, because people are taking that and they're trying to eat it. And I think that in itself should be a show.
Absolutely. Hey, rule number one in our business is the rule against having too many rules. People like to have fun. It's a great escape at the racetrack, and fans can learn more about that at ChicagolandSpeedway.com.
Have a great time, and Route66Raceway.com for the dragster events. Come back in when it's time to talk about.
Thanks, Law. Always great spending time with you
guys.
There
you go. Thanks, Scott Paddock. We're back in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I was just talking to Dave off the air. We're thinking about possibly promoting a race that only involves 80-year-old guys, 80 years old and older, who would not go faster than 40, and they'd only be in the right lane.
And would be trying to see over the windshield.
We call it the
or over the dashboard.
We call it the Florida 500.
Yeah, that's it.
And the race could start with having to take a left turn into traffic.
Right. Right, and I mean, it takes forever to get it done.
You don't even know if it's going to start. I mean, it's there. There's the opening. Oh, missed the opening again. Dang.
The only good thing, they probably wouldn't be texting.
No. Yeah. No, and you know what? We should make it legal for anybody over the age of, say, 60 to immediately run their car into anyone texting on the road.
Yes.
Ridiculous. I've got the PGA Picks finals here. The winner of this weekend's golf picks, the second major of the year, is not here today. So let's go in reverse order from worst to first. John DeCoss, we're going to make John DeCoss worse. He picked, amongst other people, Babe Ruth and Seve Ballesteros.
No, I think it was Babe Zaharias.
Oh, Babe Didrikson Zaharias.
Yes. Okay. The woman babe, yes.
So he was last. Second to last, Steve Grzanich, who went with Carl Spackler, Jack Nicholson, and Happy Gilmore.
Right. It should have been Jack Nicholas, but Jack Nicholson will do.
Yeah, it's much better.
And I wasn't last with those, really?
No.
Wow.
Second to last.
Oh.
Mary Vandeveld, fifth, after your recent run of wins.
I know, I did terrible.
Bryson DeChambeau, Tony Finau missed the cut, or Tiger Woods missed the cut.
No, Tony Finau didn't miss the cut.
But Tiger and DeChambeau did.
Yeah. Ugh, terrible.
I was fourth. I mean, nothing special about that. I had Rory, who somehow managed to get to 10th. Ricky Fowler and Gary Woodland. They all played, but didn't play exceptionally well. Third for the weekend was Super Joe.
Yeah, buddy.
Super Joe with Francesco Molinari, Rory McIlroy. And you had the winner. You had Koepka.
I did. The winner, Paisan, and Rory bounced back. He had a good weekend, I guess.
Dave Ennett was second. Yeah, you had Koepka. You had Rory. Koepka. But Xander Schauffele didn't help you that much.
Well, he helped me more than Rory did. A little bit.
And then Sandberg had all three in the top ten.
Okay, you know she's very sick because she would be just so excited right now.
Right. She's homesick.
She is very sick.
Yeah.
It was one of the first things she talked to me about when she called
Make
me this
sure
morning. She said, I'm really sick,
it.
But I won.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She usually comes to work sick.
Yeah, and I've encouraged her to never do that again. Koepka, Dustin Johnson, and Rory McIlroy were Sandberg's picks, so she's a big winner. And like all winners on this show, she gets, well, nothing if you work here. And you'll like it or you'll sit in the car.
And so we'll make some Marys. More picks for the next big tournament, which is the U.S. Open, you said, right?
Yep.
When is that?
Father's Day weekend.
Father's Day weekend, and we'll give away another foursome to the Preserve at Oak Meadows that week. So make sure you're listening then.
Well, let's see if the Marys can keep their
right. And you know my awful picks. Mm-hmm. I would be dissuaded from using them again if I had not placed at all. But now that I have placed with those names,
you feel like it could be.
I feel like maybe that the next time could be the one.
The mystery of the stolen yogurt. It's not an ABC After School special. It's what happened to Dave. We'll get to that next hour. Mindy Rickles next hour, and standing by is he in the PPG Paint Screen Room? John Rush Bowie's here. Quip Key. From Big Bang Theory. He's got a Broadway and Chicago play. Four chords and a gun. It looks very entertaining. We'll get to all that coming up. And hi to CLTV. We're joining them right now. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's where Steve is next.
When I first read this play, I knew I had to direct it because it told me stuff about the Ramones I never knew. And it told me stuff about Phil Spector that I thought I knew but didn't realize it was as bad as it really was.
All right, yes. We'll talk Big Bang, but I want to talk about Four Chords and a Gun. Broadway in Chicago, and, I'm really glad you did this. John Ross Bowie is here, and Four Chords and a Gun is, it captures the story of making an album of one of the most bizarre characters of all time being in charge of a band that didn't want to take any lessons or any advice from anybody. Phil Spector and the Ramones, right?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty...
Phil Spector, pre-murder, pre-afro?
Yes, pre-murder, pre-afro, yes. Post-balding and in the middle of the beginning of his wig phase.
And people wonder why I was angry.
But kind of sounds like you're excusing a lot of behavior.
Well, come on. I mean, I saw him at the meeting.
It just struck me as fertile ground for a good drama, putting this rather famously crazy guy with this dysfunctional, essentially, family that was the Ramones. And, judging by the audience reaction last night, it went pretty well.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. It's funny because I was looking through some of the credits and things that you've done. I'm a grandfather now, and you actually appeared on one of my granddaughter's really big favorites, and I think this may have been an acting highlight for you.
Was this House of Lies with Don Cheadle?
That's the one.
Yeah,
she's three and a half. She's a big Don Cheadle fan, and not to mention House of Lies. No, I'm speaking, of course, of Sophia the First.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say Sophia.
Yeah, Sophia the First, the animated princess.
You sounded just a little bit facetious. It really is an acting highlight of mine. I had a great time on that show. I got to sing.
And there's an amazing cast of voices on that show that come in.
Oh, they do. They get incredible people to go over there. But it was Megan Mullally did a bunch of episodes. But I'm Sven the Seahorse in an episode where she meets Ariel, the Little Mermaid.
Did you get concerned about possibly being typecast as a seahorse after that? Or
The only thing worse than being typecast is being not cast. And
there you go.
I look forward to a very long career of seahorse
work. Well said by
you.
Yeah. Well said. Introduce our friend here.
This is my friend Brian Nitzkin, who is one of the producers of the show and has been with it since its world premiere in L.A. 3 years ago.
So, Brian, 3 years later, you're sick of this show. You just want it to get up, get going, and just kill, right?
That's absolutely right.
So John Ross Bowie is a guy that's been in bands and music. We were talking about your Ithaca College band a moment ago. But were you bands before you were actor?
Yes.
So music's the first love.
Music's kind of the first love in a lot of ways. And I think without being in a band, there's no way I would have been comfortable enough to be an actor. I just think there's something about getting up there on a stage and playing your songs that makes you incredibly vulnerable. And you either deal with that or you collapse.
Sure.
And I think I dealt with it. And plus, if you've ever been if you've ever been the lone punk band on an all ska bill, you're pretty much bulletproof as far as stage fright. You know, it's just nothing's ever going to scare you again.
It's like open mic night for a stand up at a bar that doesn't do stand up.
Kind of is, yeah. Like yeah. you got the ball game on behind you,
right? And
yeah.
there's just a riser that you get up on. You're a little young for punk. Because punk like hit and
bless
almost
your
sort
heart.
Of peaked.
My goodness, you
but you're
can
like
take
10
me
years old,
point.
Right?
Oh, aren't you the sweetest thing?
Right?
I'm not around for, you know, I cannot claim to have been at the Mud Club or anything, but I'm old enough to have seen the Ramones before Dee Dee left.
Oh, is that right?
I went to go see them a few times in the 80s, and there was nothing like a Ramones show. It was just the most intense, primal, you know, it was something like 28 songs in an hour, and it was incredibly fun. And there's a moment in the play where we talk a little bit about how they would close with "We're a Happy Family," and Joey would point to everybody in the audience, and you felt you believed it. You know, you
right.
really you bought it. You're like, yeah, I'm part of this family. I'm
yeah,
part
if you
of
love the Ramones, you love the Ramones.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think it's pretty hard to be sort of halfway with them. It's kind of sure. an all or nothing proposition, the Ramones, and I'm all in.
In my disc jockey days, I interviewed the band a couple of times, and at one point they came in and threatened to punch me in the face. It was like right out of a sitcom, and I said, well, let's go.
What had you done?
I said hello.
Oh, that'll do.
Yeah, they're on the wrong side.
It was Johnny who
yeah, exactly.
punched
yeah, of course
you.
It was.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't the other guys. No. So Johnny was kind of belligerent, and that comes across in the play as well.
All right, so Four Chords and a Gun, Broadway in Chicago. I should have this up in front of me, but theater?
Broadway Playhouse.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's a really nice space. No bad seats.
And also 90 minutes, no intermission.
90 minutes, no intermission, and a little bonus concert of Ramones songs at the end.
Because it's not an effing musical, people.
It's not an effing musical. Right. It's a little chamber dramedy.
It looks like it's got a little bit of funny, a lot of drama, and a great story of like a legendary album.
Well, it's what I like about it, if I may say so myself, but the kind of biographies I like are the ones that just take a couple representative years of a subject and just right. kind of go deep on that rather
right.
than trying to do a whole soup to nuts story.
Sure.
And this just takes two really pivotal years in the Ramones' career where they were making the biggest selling album they ever made, and it's also when the band became a little bit more of a job, and the details are spaced out throughout the play. So I think it's a really interesting time in the Ramones' career, and I think that comes across. I hope that comes across.
Four Chords and a Gun is literal in the sense that there was a hostage taking. So we'll come back in a second and talk about that. Now, as I said, we'll talk a little Big Bang, too. John Ross Bowie's here. Get your tickets, Four Chords and a Gun. And where are you taking it from here? Do you guys know?
We don't know yet. We'll see. It depends on how we are received here, I think.
Yeah. So show up.
Show up.
Come on.
Go see a play.
Great night of entertainment.
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait. The earth began to cool. The autotrophs began to drool. Neanderthals developed tools. We built a wall. We built the pyramids. Math, science, history, unraveling the mystery. It all started with a Big Bang.
The Ramones never covered that. Not even a little, right?
Am I there?
Yeah. There you go.
No, not to my knowledge. Not a lot of overlap with Bare Naked Ladies and Ramones.
Very limited run of Four Chords and a Gun, plus a digital lottery for $25 seats for every performance, which is pretty cool. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com, just search Four Chords and a Gun if you like. You can get there. And they said a limited run through June 2nd, and they're doing the typical 14, 15, 27 shows a week. So there's no reason for you not to be able to get tickets. All right, tell me the story about how Phil Spector took the band hostage.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this story is there is no one set official account of what went on.
Is it a myth?
It's a myth in the sense that there's probably some germ of truth in it.
Right.
There are people who will tell you he just took the gun out and put it on the mixing board. There's people who will tell you he pointed it at Dee Dee. Mm-hmm. There's people who will tell you he pointed it at Johnny. And I sort of took the liberty of taking the most intense version of that story and putting it in the play. But I was fascinated by the fact that you can't get a straight answer out of anybody about something that happened a scant 40 years ago.
Right, right, right.
But there's a scene in that scene, a lot of the people on stage are no longer with us. A lot of these people have passed on, and it's very hard to get an official story about when and where Phil Spector pulled a gun.
It's just such a great rock and roll story.
It is a great rock and roll story, and it's just an interesting sort of examination of mental illness and abuse, and somehow there manages to be a fair amount of jokes in it as well.
For those of you not familiar with Phil Spector's Afro, I would also encourage you to see it pre-trial, because he brought that wig out occasionally as well.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and he had mirrors, right? He did have mirrors in the house?
Theoretically, but he thought it wise to arrive at the L.A. courthouse to defend himself in a murder trial wearing an actual fright wig, which...
it was tremendous. Again, BroadwayAtChicago.com, Four Chords and a Gun. Big Bang just wrapped up.
Yes.
The obvious question, where'd the Kwipke voice come from?
It came from Chuck Lorre. I auditioned with just my natural, deep resonant voice that you hear on the air right now. And I played him. I played Kwipke as sort of a nerd bully, sort of this alpha geek. Mm-hmm. And Chuck actually, I think, wisely said, I think he needs some sort of vulnerability. He needs sort of an Achilles heel. Can you do sort of a speech affectation? Then Bill Prady, who is one of the other creators of the show, said, yeah, maybe sort of a subtle Tom Brokaw liquid L. And I said, you know, any actor in the world would be like, sure, I can do that. Absolutely.
Right, here I come.
I'll do it.
Right.
And what instead came out was this ridiculous Elmer Fudd. And
well, that's the thing.
I was on the show for 11 years.
Elmer Fudd. As a guy that floats around geniuses who eventually might win a Nobel Prize someday.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was not the sort of choice I usually make, but it worked out really well. And I have auctioned off outgoing voicemails, voicemail messages in the voice.
Well, you know what's funny about it is you mentioned Megan Mullally from our show, Sophia.
Our program.
Right.
It's our Game of Thrones, essentially.
That's what I'm talking about. Megan Mullally locks into that Karen voice.
Yeah, that's nothing like her actual voice, yeah.
Right, doesn't sound like her at all. Yeah,
she's got a gorgeous speaking voice.
She really does.
Beautiful singing voice.
And you lock into this. At some point, do you go, oh, my God. I love the fact that this show is working, but I'm going to do this for how long? Again and again? Or was it nothing but fun?
It was really fun. I only did it a couple times a year. I came in there just when Sheldon got a little too big for his britches.
Break
the glass, and Kripke comes out to knock him down a peg or two. So it never felt too overdone for me. There was some talk at one point among the writers that they were going to have me go away for a year and come back just very carefully enunciating all of my R's and L's, and that was going to be one possible resolution for Kripke, and it didn't come to fruition, but I always thought that was kind of a funny idea.
Yeah, and there's a great scene-stealing moment in the finale. I thought the finale was very sweet, by the way. The
finale was really sweet. They did a nice job with it, and it's crazy that it's just crazy to be a part of something that huge and that long-running. But yeah, I like the ending they did right for Kripke. I thought it was very
on brand. Cool.
If it's still saving on your DVR, I won't spoil it for you. But it's a really on brand moment for Kripke.
Yeah, and I'm going to ruin one thing about the show, but it's worth it because it's worthy of mentioning. The elevator gets fixed. Doesn't ruin the show for you, but it's another cool moment.
I have a terrific video of the audience reaction of that. I'll show you.
They loved it.
Oh, my God. They lost their minds. Are you kidding? I have a great video that I'm pointed towards the audience for it. It's great.
That had the biggest mass/cult following as well, because there were people that were like Game of Thrones nuts for the show. But there are also people that go, well, this is the most popular show on television. Of course, I watch it every week.
It was interesting how it was sort of a weird mix of a cult hit and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
It really, great description. It tapped into a couple of unserved demographics, I think, and it was really interesting to be on the receiving end of that. And I mean, I've told this story before, but it's always fun when like a mother and her child come up to me and he goes, my son watches Big Bang Theory, and because of your show, he wants to be and my heart stops because I'm terrified she's going to say actor. And then she goes, scientist.
Ah,
and it's so nice to hear stuff like
about that.
Yeah, it's a really lovely feeling.
You've inspired a child to science.
Which is hilarious. Take that, Mrs. Bromfman. That's my 10th grade
science
teacher.
Never
you probably
took
that out of context, but...
Well, listen, it's great seeing you. I hope this is a huge hit.
Thank you very much, Steve. Nice meeting you.
Four Chords and a Gun, and I'll see you at the Ithaca College reunion. I'll be the guy out parking cars since I'm still on my leave of absence.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Go Bombers.
Yeah. And Four Chords and a Gun, a Broadway Playhouse, now through June 2nd. Get your tickets, Broadway Playhouse, at BroadwayInChicago.com. And don't forget about that digital lottery as well. 9:32. Headlines next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It is 9:43. Bill and Wendy at 10, of course. My friend Mindy Rickles had to cancel last minute. It's a long story, but she's going to be back on soon. I just want people to know I didn't bump her. Because Don was a pal and very, very good to me. And I don't want him haunting me.
No, you wouldn't want him... You wouldn't want him to come after you.
No, because, you know, the handful,
you get called a,
the handful of times I was with Don, the great honor was to insult me. You know, anybody knows that. If you got insulted by Don Rickles, it was great.
Sure.
You know, you just want to make sure that... well, see, I don't know what heaven is, but I know Don's there. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how Don could be in heaven and still insulting everybody. It doesn't seem to go with heaven's business model.
Yeah, calling people hockey pucks in heaven. Yep. A little odd.
Mindy and my friend Ed Mann have been married for 22 years, I guess now. And their sons, Ethan and Harrison, are pretty much all grown up. But Don used to love to talk about how Ethan and Harrison could care what he did with Frank Sinatra and Johnny Carson, but they loved him as Mr. Potato Head. They just loved him there. And like I said, Mindy's doing great. She's doing stand-up all over. She's back and forth to Vegas all the time. So if you ever get a chance to see Mindy Rickles, I highly recommend it. All right, what do we know about your stolen yogurt? Any updates?
No. No one has come forward. Well, there's one update, because you had suggested earlier that a member of our sales team might have been responsible.
Well, the sales boss in particular.
Mr. Gallagher, but I ran into him. And
he's claiming he's innocent?
He not only claims he's innocent, he said if you held him down and made him eat yogurt, he would spit it out.
Well, what a great cover that is.
Yeah, good point.
So, Steve Grzanich, sit down, grab a mic, will you? Steve Grzanich has just come over from the newsroom to try to lend some reportage on this. I mean, what are your instincts as a newsman? Do you have any sense of who may have stolen the yogurt?
I don't want to start anything, but I saw Mary Vandeveld eating yogurt this morning.
Oh.
Mary eats yogurt every morning.
What kind of yogurt?
She snuck out, and then she snuck back in
every day
with yogurt in her paw.
Dave, what kind of yogurt was missing?
It was a light and fit yogurt.
I'm trying to even see what
banana cream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what yogurt do you claim was yours, Mary Vandeveld?
It's a Yoplait.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yoplait.
That's your Yoplait.
Yeah.
Mary's like, I don't eat fancy yogurt like
I Dave. Figured Dave eats Greek yogurt.
It's not, well.
I'm sure he does.
It's light
and
fit. I guess
it is. Yeah.
But I don't eat Greek yogurt.
How would she know that, though? Unless she was stealing
I think
Dave's
she's
yogurt.
Top five and a suspect.
I really don't think Mary stole it. I don't think anyone on this show stole it.
It's got to be one of the sales weasels.
To me, the bigger issue here, it's not my yogurt. Believe me, I can go get another. I brought another yogurt in today. It's still there. I checked. But it's why you would take someone else's belongings when you work in a place with such a great prestige involved.
You would hope that the person was really hungry.
Right.
Which, if they ask me.
Yeah, had a sugar spike or something.
Right. Great call.
Especially if you were working overnight, she hadn't eaten all night.
But this was starving. Between 4:30 in the morning and 10:20 in the morning. I mean, it's just a little under 6 hours.
What do we know about DiGilio's producer?
Yeah,
can we trust DiGilio's producer?
He gets done, snatch and run, both of them.
Oh,
Tom.
That's you know, Tom, I haven't thought
Tom
of
Hush.
That.
He's new.
Because they get off at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Can we trust that guy?
He doesn't look like a yogurt eater, though. I wouldn't
a big dude.
I wouldn't pick it. Pay him.
And I know Nick wouldn't take it.
I immediately thought maybe Bennett Wake Night, but he came in and confessed that it wasn't him. He came
Bennett
in and pronounced that it wasn't him.
He's running around the station confessing.
Telling everybody.
Everyone.
That
Bennett's a human tapeworm. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy eats everything in sight. So.
He finds food when it's hidden in places. Yeah. Like if there's like a Danish or something hidden somewhere in the newsroom, Bennett will find it.
So, I don't know, Dave. I got to go with sales. I got to believe it's the sales department. Now, it could be one of our lovely assistants that we have. We have many assistants here, and they're all delightful people, quiet, pleasant. Those would be, you know, as far as I'm concerned, those would be reasons to be suspicious of them, because what a great way to hide.
Good point. You left out another department.
What's that?
Engineering.
Oh.
Yeah, see. Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
It depends on the day, because I know there are some engineers who bring their own food, and they would be on our side on this, because they're, you know, they want to protect their food too.
Yeah, but Ferguson would never do it. No, because people have taken his food before. Right. He yelled at me once because I threw away his fish.
Yeah.
Never heard the end of that one.
Again, it's not about my yogurt. I'm over that.
Well, the rules of the work refrigerator, even though I don't partake, should be keep your mitts off my stuff.
That, to me, that seems like a pretty obvious, right?
You know, and I had the bagel and cream cheese incident, and
I was in a band called Bagel and Cream Cheese Incident.
I actually wrote my name in marker on the bagel bag and on the cream cheese, and somebody still decimated it.
Steve, you shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. I don't bring it in anymore.
Well, Mary Vandeveld, you're all about the labeling, aren't you?
Well, I bring the same lunch bag every day, so everybody knows it's my lunch bag. So I don't even have to label it. So if you just bring it in a bag, don't just put random food in there. And you should always, this is my rule, you should always eat daily. Bring your daily bag. Don't bring enough food for an entire week. Like bagels and cream cheese in it, because people are going to steal that. They see a whole bag of bagels, they'll go, ha ha, I should take one.
Give you the right to steal it, whether you bring it for a week.
I'm saying no, it doesn't, but it gives you a better chance of it not happening.
No, it's not yours.
You shouldn't have to even take those precautions.
It's the real world, Dave.
773 texter says, okay, it was me.
Oh, good.
They're tired of us talking about it.
Yeah, they just want me to move on.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
David Letterman's out promoting the new season of My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. He obviously had fine time doing the first six shows because he said he wasn't going to do anymore. Now he's back with more. And those shows debut, I can't remember when the premiere. I think the premiere might even be this week. Anyway, Letterman used to have Trump on all the time. All the time. And you know, he talked about his great guest because, you know, he'd say anything. And things have changed because, you know, Letterman, like me and others, they didn't expect Trump would ever be president of the United States. Here's David Letterman talking to Willie Geist this weekend about Donald Trump.
As an American, I don't like this man as a president of our country. I love being an American, but I don't feel he represents me, and I don't like that. I mean, even with other presidents that I've disagreed with politically, I felt like, okay, I can live with their representation. But I'm sick and tired of everybody wringing their hands about this. Oh, my God, did you hear what he did? Okay, let's just settle this at the next election. You know, let's just stop yakking about what a goon he is.
That's Letterman talking to Willie Geist. By the way, 531 is May 31st, and that's when Netflix will show, or I should say release, the first of the new season of My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. Talking about, as Letterman said, the goon. But it goes to everybody wringing their hands and going, what can I do? Because the Democratic Party ought to be ashamed of themselves. The House Democrats in particular ought to be ashamed of themselves. They have a responsibility to step up. They haven't done it. There's a guy named Tom Steyer, who is a billionaire, who has been after Trump since Trump was originally even in the race, calling him out for his lies and his dangerous behavior. This is from Steyer's organization, needtoimpeach.com, need the number two, impeach.com. Here's a .org. You guys can look that up for me. But this is really powerful, and if you see the video, you'll see it as well. But the audio translates well as well. So the expectations of what might happen when the Mueller report came out and beyond, not so much. What's Nancy Pelosi doing as a leader? Here's some folks who had something to say about it. Roll it.
This is a message.
For leaders of the Democratic Party. For over 2 years, this president has broken the law.
And nothing happened.
You told us to wait for the Mueller investigation.
And when he showed obstruction of justice.
Nothing happened.
When this president
took money from foreign governments.
And blocked the release of his tax returns.
Nothing happened.
And when his administration illegally refused to testify.
Nothing happened. Now you tell us to wait for the next election?
Really?
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 This is why we volunteered, raised money,
went door to door,
and voted in the last election.
Our founding fathers expected you,
Congress,
to hold a lawless president accountable.
And you're doing nothing. Nothing.
Nothing.
He broke his oath of office.
He's defying you.
He's laughing at you.
And he's getting away with it.
This is our democracy.
But Congress is part of the system, and the system is broken. We have to fix it.
Again, Congress has a responsibility for oversight. It doesn't matter that the cowards of in the Senate, the Republican cowards in the Senate, would not remove him from office. You have a responsibility to take a lawless president and point out his behavior, no matter what the outcome is. That's it. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Bertrand. Just moments away now. And then Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here.
Greetings.
How are you guys?
Excited, Steve. It's Inauguration Day.
It is Inauguration
Day. Yeah, we're very excited.
You'll have the swearing-in, won't you?
We're going to run it live.
And the swearing-in, by the way, traditionally does involve cursing.
Yes.
There will usually it's Wendy who does the swearing-in.
That is hysterical.
And historically accurate.
I want to congratulate Pat Brady. You guys know Pat Brady.
Yes, congratulations, Pat
Brady. Pat had a graduation party for his three daughters. He's got one daughter graduating from college regular.
Mm-hmm.
He's got another daughter graduating from college early.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a daughter graduating from high school all this year.
Wow. Excellent.
Busy. Yeah.
Wow, three presents from the guests.
Well, yeah, I dropped by his house on, I should say his estate, on Saturday night and dropped off. This is the thing. I'm an idiot. I think that's clear. So I get three graduation cards.
Yeah.
And I don't know the girls well. They're great kids. They really are. And so what do you get them? Get them Amazon gift cards. The kids love the Amazon gift cards.
Can't go wrong.
So I get them the Amazon gift cards, and I realize, well, one of the gift cards I only got two. I didn't get three.
Oh.
Three cards, two gift cards. That's not going to work. So I go back and get the third gift card. I pull up in the car. I'm finishing the cards. I fold the cards. I lick on my clothes. I'm going to go inside. I hand out the cards. I get back in my car. I leave to go home. I see the gift card. Yep. I stop to buy.
Men.
The third gift card.
And then you have to figure out which envelope doesn't have a gift card.
Oh, I know.
You do know already?
Yeah. I text Pat. I said, show this to Grace and tell her your friend Steve's an idiot.
You normally do not attend functions like this. How did it happen that you came to be at this one?
Well, Pat is a friend, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
And Pat forced his children to come by my house on Thanksgiving.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, you have to go then.
And they brought the traditional holiday gift of donut holes.
Yeah.
So after that, I thought, well, the least I can do is go by this graduation thing.
Yes.
And Pat had me parking cars outside for a while.
He did.
Yeah, it's a very upscale
makes some extra money doing that.
You should have stole an Amazon gift card from someone else's car.
Well, to make myself feel better on the way home, I spent that gift card.
Oh, you
made a couple things I needed on Amazon.
That worked out for everybody.
So, yeah, kind of did.
Good.
What are you guys doing today other than the swearing-in?
We don't know. Everything is based on how long the swearing-in will take.
That's a fair point.
You know?
Yeah.
So we've got a bunch of stuff in the bullpen warming up.
Well, Game of Thrones talk, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and did you see Rahm outside with a sign that says, we'll boss people around for food? He's already out. So you might want to grab him, is all I'm saying.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What do you think he'll do? Like, 5 years from now, where do you think he'll be?
It's a good question. You know, he was very proud of the fact that he's going to be what he feels is one of the first Jewish fly fishermen. He's going to be in the water very soon. He's doing the circle tour on his bike. I don't know. 5 years? I think he's going to get back into running for something.
Do you? Yeah.
He may take our job middays on WGN.
Possible.
Look, we could all be guns.
Yep.
Rahm 24/7. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. And here is Wendy.